When I think of my wife, I always think of her head, the shape of it to begin with. The very first time I saw her, it was the back of the head I saw, and there was something lovely about it, the angles of it, like a shiny, hard corn kernel or a riverbed fossil. She had what the Victorians would call a finely shaped head. You could imagine the skull quite easily. I'd know her head anywhere. That is the opening passage of Gone Girl, a book by Gillian Flynn, a riveting thriller that comes at a terrible crime-style event from two very different but weirdly complementary angles. I'm Jason Squamata. This is Book Circle Online, and this is the Gone Girl edition.
From the Library of Maria Menounos, this is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Okay, so here we are. I'm Jason Squamata. Welcome to Book Circle. I am here, as always, with my ravishing co-hosts,
Pat Janowski,
Mark Savage,
Christy Lovato.
And we are here covering a marvelous, ripping thriller of a book that I just love to pieces.
Soon to be made into a major motion picture.
But an adventure of the senses in its own right, even in its book form.
Absolutely.
Entitled Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn. I loved it. What are some general thoughts that we all might have on this book, Pat?
This was a diverting mystery. Little things about it cropped up to annoy me from time to time. We'll get into those later.
Mm-hmm.
However, once I hit the halfway point of this book, I could not put it down.
Mm.
I stayed up till 3 in the morning reading this book. Or was that the last book I read? It was... Let me start that again.
No.
Was it? I can't remember.
Well, no, I remember when we spoke of this book as you were in the process of reading it.
I said that. So... Yeah. I stayed up until 3 in the morning, two nights in a row, to finish this book because I was just completely riveted. That's where I'll start.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Mark?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I feel kind of samey. I feel the...
Do you feel dirty?
It's kind of a suburban samey, not a glamorous samey.
Uh-huh.
A kind
right.
of desperate kind of... stuck in a relationship with someone who isn't the person you thought they were.
Mm.
See me, that kind of
right.
You can't have enough showers to wash that away.
Yeah. 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 So I mean
yeah.
But you I mean we could consider that a measured and considered aesthetic effect.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah. Oh
yeah. Yeah, for real. Interesting, Christy.
I did not like this book. I loved this book, but I did not like it. It was like a really pretty place that I just wanted to get out of as quickly as possible. And actually, I want to wrap this up as quick as we can so I can go check my husband's cell phone messages.
Which cell phone?
All of them.
Oh, all of them.
All of them.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. No, it was – these were two of the most horrible people that I've ever met.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're the husband and the wife.
Yeah.
Right. So,
Nick and Amy.
Right.
Nick and Amy.
Yeah, so this book is, ostensibly, initially, about this couple, this charming, but I think from the get-go kind of creepy couple, Nick and Amy. Amy has disappeared from their lovely suburban Missouri home.
Under mysterious circumstances.
Under mysterious circumstances. And we are clued into this. It opens with Nick's narration, which begins on the day of her disappearance. And I think in kind of an ingenious way, she's framing his experience so that, I mean, we go a ways into his story without really knowing how involved he is in her disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, he sort of narrates it dispassionately and does not appear to have knowledge of what went on.
Right, right. And then when it cuts, the chapters are interspersed between Nick in present time and Amy's diary, his lovely wife and her sweet diary, recounting the moments of their relationship leading up to whatever terrible thing happened.
Mm-hmm. And in both of those narratives, you can tell that there's something seriously wrong with each of them.
Uh-huh.
He is off kilter in some way and guilty of something, and it does not help that he is constantly fantasizing about his wife's head and her crawling across the floor.
Yeah, we don't know if this is a memory. As we learn more about the dynamics of their relationship, it becomes, you know, not more obvious, but, you know, more possible that this is just a fantasy that he nourishes to get through the day.
Sort of nourishes. It's beautifully drawn in that I agree with you, Christy. I hated that first half. It made me very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in long-term relationships before, and I know that shocks you. And
what's that like?
I'll never say.
Was it like this? Was it just like this? Because this is how I imagine it would be.
Here's the thing. There were some very typical relationship issues that were addressed very true to lifely.
Except for with a missing and or dead wife.
Exactly. Like if he killed his wife, this is all horrible. If something else happened, it's horrible still. If it's just, there's some really ugly descriptions of, very, very specific descriptions of the ugly feelings and the ugly ways people can react to them and the things that can happen in a relationship despite what may appear to be everybody's best efforts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The fact that we have an unreliable narrator or two makes this all suspect. But still, I felt at one point I asked my partner, what is your blood type?
Why do you want to know?
Because I didn't know.
If it comes up in a police investigation.
Because it came up.
Right.
And Nick doesn't.
And he doesn't know. And the police officer says, you don't know. Yeah. And I'm like to myself, am I supposed to know?
Right.
I don't know.
Is that a sign of guilt that he doesn't know?
Right? But then I asked, and my partner did not know his own blood type.
I don't even know my blood type, so maybe I killed me.
You don't?
killed
me.
Call the police.
Well, I'm glad you said unreliable narrator or two, because Amy's diary is so wrong.
Oh.
And right.
Okay, what I love about it, in contrast to the kind of creeping evil of Nick's perspective, where, you know, I love how that sort of first chapter, we're buying him as that he's clearly like kind of emotionally inert and has a very curious detachment from what's happening or what's coming to light. But, you know, we're still, you know, I'm still buying him as a normal, quote unquote, normal person. But then when it gets to the end of that chapter and he says, and that was the fifth lie I told the police.
Yeah. And you're just like, oh, God, you want to go back and look, but you don't want to go back and look because it's so distasteful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's so evasive even in terms of his own internal dialogue that it almost keeps it convincingly cuts away from, you know, like right on the brink of revelation, even if he's just talking to himself.
Well, you don't know if he's hiding things from himself.
Right. Right.
Even.
Yeah. Whereas similarly in her diary, I mean, it cuts to this kind of like romantic Pollyanna, you know, version of an earlier stage in the relationship.
They started out in New York.
Right.
Literary type people. She is the daughter of these two, we come to find out, crazy people, but they appear to be Mr. and Mrs.
Or are they? Well,
because her testimony has it that they're crazy. Well, do we believe her testimony?
Less and less.
Well, I believed that her mom had all those miscarriages.
Yeah,
sure.
And that they were all
named Hope. Does that make you crazy?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so maybe not crazy, but I've known people. Boy, since my life is starting to sound really suspect right now.
Are you dead right now?
You'll never know.
Uh-huh.
I've known people who, when they suffer from severe infertility, really seem to go off the deep end. And I'm not criticizing these people, and I've been through a little bit of that, but not to the extent that her mother allegedly was in this book. But I can totally picture that happening, and I sympathize with it. However, I can also see how that sort of family circumstance might really fuck up this kid.
Go ahead.
Please.
It goes deeper than that. I mean, because So Amy's mother suffers a series of miscarriages, 7 miscarriages, and she's the 8th pregnancy, and she lives. And their entire life, their livelihood, they write children's books based on her as a character, their entire life.
Amazing Amy,
revolves around her. So you see
but not
how
her,
right?
But a construct of how they want her to be.
Uh huh.
Right. Yeah, like whenever she makes a decision they don't approve of, the fictional version of her enshrined in these books makes the opposite decision.
Oh, it's so horrible, so passive aggressive, and that's what I mean by crazy people,
right?
Like you, honey, you be however you want to be, but our perfect Amy would do this,
which has nothing to do with you,
right? Yeah.
Right. Right. I love how when we get beyond diary Amy to actual Amy, crazy bitch Amy.
Uh-huh.
I love that description of her seven angel sisters who never had a chance to get anything wrong, and how can she live up to that? How can she live up to her mother's miscarried children?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, but even before it gets to that point, I think there's this interesting dynamic as we learn that these diaries with her rhapsodic romantic vision of her relationship with Nick are written for a very specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So they're written to the police,
yep.
And in a way written to Nick. And there's this amazing, as you're reading them, you're feeling this growing sympathy for her as it becomes apparent that something terrible has happened. But also I'm hearing Nick's voice in my head, like imagining him reading them. And finding her like infuriatingly stupid for her inability to see how menacing he is, like, and that turns out not to be the actual Nick, but there was a stage.
Oh, I see what you mean. Uh-huh.
Yeah, like there was like I was
when
I
you
was,
weren't sure whether he murdered her or not.
Yeah, and I was identifying with her idealism and the tragedy of her hopes that would be so violently thwarted, and also I was identifying with his rage that would make such a thing, you know, happen. Like two people who are just so obviously estranged from each other and projecting things on each other.
Yeah.
In a way, I saw a parallel between Amy's diary and her parents' Amazing Amy books.
Yeah.
Because there was
like
everything that Nick did in diaries that a normal woman would be like, we need to talk.
Uh-huh.
Right.
She's like, I'm not going to be one of those girls who gets mad at her husband
right.
because he doesn't meet her at the bar when he says he's going to. Those silly monkeys.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I can't believe that any police officer would have fallen for that.
Well, but a police officer is, and as she like kind of indicts the male of the species, like later on when she's describing her her strategy, that it's she's pretending to be a very particular type of girl, this cool girl that that in her view every man is hungering for. So even the
right.
police
and
reading
which
these diaries, how could you hurt this poor, perfect woman.
Who's this complete cool girl.
Right.
She's nothing like my wife. How could you have done
that? She gave you everything.
Right. And nobody recognizes that, that cool girl is a fiction.
Right.
That does every man want that, really?
Uh-huh.
She has such hostility towards men in general and him in particular.
Right.
That you mistrust that whole idea.
Yeah, well, you feel like she assesses him accurately, like the way he throws himself into the affair, the Andy relationship, this unchallenging
right. mm-hmm.
sort of, you know, girl who's
actual
much
cool girl.
An actual, well, or someone who's like much more, with more authenticity and vim
yeah.
and vigor performing, you know, the cool girl, because that's what you do, without this kind of, you know, yammering sociopath behind her eyes, you know, like
right.
mm-hmm. reinforcing the mask. But, you know, like, but if Amy's vision of the, like, the archetypal male is Nick, and presumably Nick's version of the archetypal desirable female is the cool girl, then they're both insane.
Right.
Right. And that's a lot, to me, a lot of the story was like two sociopaths fall in love.
Right.
And they accidentally meet at that moment where they're both being the golden boy and the
mm-hmm.
golden girl,
right.
where you rein in your victim.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
And
is,
it turns out they're both sociopaths.
And it turns out they're both right. And it ends that way, which
yeah,
is so.
Yeah, they are. But that's what's interesting is her critique of his behavior is completely, it's true.
Yeah.
And yet, I mean, he is completely flawed, but not in ways which are completely unacceptable.
Well, and the thing is, her critique of his behavior is true. However, we don't know at this point that she is a sociopath and that she has put on the persona with which she has attracted him deliberately and held it up for a couple years and then changed after they got married. And so he's frustrated. He's like, who is this person? You're not the person I married.
Right.
And she literally is not, because she was pretending.
Right. But in her view, he did the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And he did do the same thing,
right,
because
he said deliberate,
exactly,
effort.
He said, I would spend 2 hours crafting an email to her.
We all right. do those things
yeah.
at the beginning,
but we don't do what Amy does.
Right. And so I think he's a little less detestable or crazy than she is.
Well,
what makes it hard with her is when you realize the extent of her lies, mm-hmm. when you realize the extent of her performance and how long she's been planning things, it becomes impossible to believe anything she's telling us.
Right, right.
Which is where I had problems with the second half of the book, because up until a certain point, it feels like a conflict, two people who you have some sympathy for, perhaps in different ways, struggling to try and make something work that isn't perfect, but retain some idea that it is.
Right.
It gets to the point where you realize that's not what she's doing at all. She's doing something far bigger, far more sinister, far more
hyperbolic
yeah.
and crime fiction-y.
And then you can't believe anything she says.
Yeah.
At which point, the hard thing with unreliable narrators is you get to the point where you think, well, why should I care what you're saying to me?
Right, because if it's just going to get flipped in the
next
chapter.
Yeah, and everything you say is random, and I don't know.
And right. you're capable of far more sinister things than I even thought.
Right, right. Well, that I had a similar, I mean, I loved it to the end. It accrued like a different kind of entertainment value than what I was anticipating.
Yeah,
too.
But there was a quality to the first half of it that I missed when it went away. There mm-hmm. was a spookiness because
yeah.
it was about, we were getting more and more intimate with these deranged characters.
Well, and he was falling back in love with her.
Yeah, yeah. And we were
her horrible plot, whatever, was working.
Right.
But you realize, I can't trust the Amy of that half of the book. So
right.
then can I trust this carefully nuanced observation
yeah.
of a relationship? At what point is any of this true?
Well, and then it became this kind of this game of like sting after sting after
yeah.
sting.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the second half relied on kind of like crime fiction, mm-hmm. like plot mechanics.
Yeah.
In a way that the first half.
Well, I mean, in the first half, I was thinking about their relationship. In the second half, I was thinking about a certain kind of movie.
Uh-huh.
The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Uh-huh.
This single white female, Basic
right.
Instinct.
Right.
That kind of
sure.
kind of wave of films in which women do incredibly violent things.
Right, and at the same time are kind of presented in the text as woman, that there's somehow like vampire, monster, woman.
Woman.
I mean, I felt like she felt very real to me up until, I mean, I loved the reveal of, yo, I'm not dead. And,
yeah,
you know,
me too.
And you know, you get a rush from that, like you do from any like really carefully plotted like twist. But there was something that was lost.
Was anyone surprised by her not being dead?
No,
I wasn't surprised by her not being dead. Really, the moment the first half ended when he's walking up to the shed, in my mind, I had tried and tried to kind of bend it into this shape where, okay, his dad, who's mentioned only sporadically and mm-hmm. who's crazy but keeps escaping and has emotional issues and killed her. Mm. While he was cleaning the blood, she crawled away and she's in the shed. Her dead body's in the shed.
Mm.
That's where I was like, that's what's there.
Right.
I was glad it wasn't
uh-huh.
because it's like the book ended halfway through.
Uh-huh,
I knew
right,
that
yeah,
wasn't going to happen because
right.
of the size of the book.
Yes.
When it goes into that different sort of construct, this female villain movie, this
mm-hmm.
for me, it's kind of the classic murder mystery type of thing that
mm-hmm.
that happened in the second half, and I like that. That's what I was
yeah.
saying. It was diverting.
Sure.
The first half was super uncomfortable for me. It felt close to home. It felt like, oh,
yeah.
this is a relation. This is written by somebody who's been in a relationship
right.
and who understands how things die, how hard it is, how, and it was just. And then the second half was kind of like, ooh. what's going to happen next.
Right, yeah.
And however, there are disadvantages to that. Like when he, the unreliable narrative thing, when he decided not to love Andy anymore on the airplane ride. Okay, I don't love her.
Right.
And that just like, poof, she was out of his life. If he can turn off his feelings so quickly,
yeah.
it really undermines our investment yeah. in his story.
Right.
You know, in
well,
his...
Well, you know, I actually, something with her, like the big reveal with her is this, you know, scheming villain and still being alive. Something else that was lost that I liked about him was like the possibility of his supreme evil.
Yeah.
Like I didn't, I missed the dread in his sections where like in those first few chapters with him, he's like, I love that where he's first being interrogated by the police and one of the policemen spins the chair around in the interrogation room and sits down in it. And he's wondering, is that something that cops have always done, or did they see it in a cop do that in a movie and decided it was cool and they've done it ever since?
Yeah.
Right.
And he's like, is this,
and okay, if so, how am I supposed to?
And
how
so much, right, so yeah. much of his detachment, uh-huh. which is seen as a sign of guilt,
yeah.
is almost this postmodernist awareness he has
right.
of having seen these movies where the husband is suspected.
Right.
Which we all have, too.
Yeah. Well, and he's living in a trope and in a weird way.
Completely. Yeah. And he finds himself having, you know, the realistic thing to do in that situation is to be completely confused by the cameras and
right.
to kind of stand there looking blank.
Right, right.
But what is seen as a sign of innocence is yeah. to perform.
Right.
To perform, to have tears, to yeah. actually go out there and be the great TV personality.
Right, right.
Which
right.
he can't find himself doing.
Yeah.
And that's where I found him most sympathetic.
Oh, yeah, and fascinating, because when he talks about having, you know, he's this working class guy, but he's got this old money face that you just want to punch as soon yeah. as you see him.
He's a young and, Robert Redford.
And yeah. his name is really Lance, not Nick.
Right, yeah, yeah, right. yeah. But he could never, no one can know that.
Not Nicky.
That conjunction with the
and
face.
You can tell when the public narrative starts to turn against him when they start calling him Lance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the three, right. Lance, Nicholas,
right.
Dunn.
Yeah.
Right.
The three names, the serial killer.
But, and so having this reflex right, where right. if anyone sees his face at rest, they're going to take an instant disliking to him. So being up there in the lights with Amy's parents, like crying copious tears, and he's nervous, so he has his reflex is the ingratiating
smile.
No one with this goofy smile could ever be like a preppy schmuck that's going to hurt you.
But
why would you?
But, makes
but
look
in
like
that
a
context,
shark.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. Their reveals are like inverted. So you right. start out with Nick being threatening and potentially evil, and it turns yeah. out he really is just kind of a schmuck. He's an accidental misogynist. He has his father's like fucking bitch
yeah.
going through his head all the time.
Even though he really wants to rebel against that and not be that.
But yeah. all the women around him are manipulative bitches. Yeah. Shauna.
That right. woman, is that the name of the woman with the selfie? The
mm-hmm.
like
yeah.
one, oh
yeah,
my
yeah.
God.
But right. he knows it as well, and yet he walks into the trap.
Yeah,
well, Shauna, and have then the power to say, "Leave me alone."
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he
which
I think
is kind of a feminine thing. It's like women aren't allowed to say to someone, I'm not interested.
Right.
You know, so you have to say, I have a boyfriend.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Only until they are confronted with the fact that there might be another male
right.
will they leave you alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you just can't say, hey,
but
I'm
also,
not interested.
I think there's a point where he as a man does not have experience of saying no to women.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't do it. As mm-hmm. we've seen, he has affairs. He doesn't say no. But also on another level, women don't approach men in quite the way that men approach women, perhaps. So he's used to being the yes man. He gets what he wants because he approaches women and says, I want you, and they want him right. because he's attractive.
And well, he's the baby boy.
Well, yeah, but I think also, like, assuming, okay, I look like this and I said the right thing that the character who's playing me would say in this situation, so I got this, so I guess I want this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like there's, like, in the same way that there's this kind of, like, shrieking mania in her that mm-hmm. she masks mm-hmm. with these layers of performance, there's just this emptiness. I mean,
well, not necessarily empty, but really, really buried.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because what, he does what does feel he want? Things. He does right. feel things, but he does, they're not close to the surface.
Right.
Yeah, it mostly comes out as this, like, he's just exasperated with the whole situation. Like, this can't be happening to me. This is crazy.
Wait, really?
This is like a movie.
What the hell?
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. And I think that the constant, this, you know, like what, you know, this is like a movie. What role am I supposed to be playing? What narrative do the police have? And do I play to that or against that? Like all those questions of what kind of story am I in and how should I be behaving seem to indicate just like someone, like I've read interviews with the author where she, and the thing that really made me want to read this book was her espousing her she's a student of Patricia Highsmith and she loves Patricia Highsmith.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. And so in, you know, in the Ripley books, you get this portrait of a sociopath whose relationships are very fleeting and opportunistic. We don't really get to see, I mean, Ripley is married at, I think, a couple of points in those books, but we don't get to see Ripley in a relationship per se. And for the first half of the book, before the reveal, and he became more definitively the victim, there's a similar nobody home. There's this similar,
like, so Nick might be Ripley.
Yeah.
You might, by the end, think that actually...
Yeah, that Amy's more Ripley. The Ripley character. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
And well, so... Post reveal,
yes.
Post the first black page,
right,
where we get to see the true internal dialogue of Amy, not the diary Amy.
Yeah, I can't wait till they find my diary.
I really started to enjoy that. That transition for me was so Amy has chopped off her hair. She gives herself a mousy haircut. She has slowly been putting on. You know, she's gained 15 pounds. She has essentially disarmed all of the qualities that made it easy for her to manipulate people, and she has put herself in this world, the hideaway hotel,
in the Catskills,
in the Ozark,
Adirondacks,
Ozarks.
Mm-hmm. Some of those eastern.
So she's basically in this. Yeah, she's in this sad sort of like backward hotel where there's lots of runaways, and she has no leverage.
These especially sad care. And backwards to her. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very much from her moneyed perspective, isn't it? They're all kind of desperate and lonely and disgusting people.
Right. And
from her perspective.
Well, she felt the same way about her neighbors in, you know.
Right.
In Missouri, yeah.
But she's no longer amazing Amy. Mm-hmm. So there's this huge, for me, there was a big juxtaposition between Greta and Noelle. Greta, the runaway woman with the bruise, and Noelle, you know, who's very quickly becomes the alpha bitch in that situation at the hideaway, and Noelle, who was completely beholden to Amy.
Right, for anything. For
so
everything.
She's no longer amazing Amy. She's no longer beautiful. She's no longer, you know, intellectual or rich or any of these things, and she has no power. And she quickly finds out that she has no power.
Right.
So she gets robbed by these two yokels, essentially.
And to me, that was really fun to read all that stuff. She reveals to the landlady that she needs money, and landlady says, oh, he might hire you to do something or whatever. However
right.
it is
Get
that,
a job.
That he knocks on her door in the middle of the night. Come on. There's a 50 in it for you. I'm like, really? You're going to go with him? And it was highly entertaining and unlikely, that whole scenario.
Almost farcical.
Yeah.
Like she
has
absolutely no tools to operate outside of the limited sphere that she's been in.
And it's where the cracks in her character appear, because at certain points she is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And in other ways, she's very naive.
Naive, that way in particular.
And some of my problems with the second part of the book came when you think, so I'm supposed to believe she's someone who thought of this a year in advance, but she didn't see this thing happening.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
You didn't see that coming?
Yeah.
A guy who's stealing catfish and finds out you have 10 grand in your belt.
Okay, yeah. So hold on. In her defense, because I'm just like her.
Oh, Amy, c'est moi.
Really? I have to go.
I have to go
She had
home with
decided
you.
She was going to kill herself. She wasn't going to be living for more than a couple months. So
$10,000
was plenty.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it was only when her sociopathic brain, for whatever reason, decided, oh, maybe he does love me. Oh, maybe I'll go back.
Right.
Oh, maybe, you know, that any of that cropped up. So I think I hear you in that it's she's super smart. She's smarter than everyone around her. However, she is mentally ill. And so there's like,
well, in moves like that, they discredit her, like make her less convincing as the pulp villain. But in its ultimate rondelay back to love story, you know, like they're just so fucked up, the two of them.
I can't believe when she ended up back on his doorstep. I thought that was so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved
it. Change of plans.
I know. And in her mind, it's this hero's journey, right? So she has called Desi, the boy who loved her, who she turns out is one of many people she has completely destroyed because they have in some small way, just a little way, they have offended her.
Right.
Or treated her in a way other than that she is the most superior woman on the planet.
Right.
Right.
So she has framed a man for rape. She has framed a teenage girl for stalking.
Right. Well, but that's, you know, but she's got this operatic version of the same complexes that Nick has, because repeatedly he'll talk about, you know, okay, here, or she'll, like, here's this lifelong friend.
Right.
Or it's often in her examining his behaviors, but a lifelong friend will just say something out of turn.
Stuts.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll never hear from that person again.
Huh.
You know, like he's kind of got a hair trigger. Okay, you don't see me the way I want to be seen. Okay, then I don't need you around
anymore. I don't know why I'm so much more forgiving to him.
Because I am a man.
Well,
is that it? I'm just such a man lover. Here's my question.
Yes.
This is a complete tangent. Andy, his affair, seemed pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
What would have happened? Could Nick and Andy have been happy together if Nick and Amy had just quietly divorced?
Well, no, even Go. So the twin sister, Nick's twin sister, says the only reason why you love her is because she sees you the way that you want to be seen in these very limited circumstances, in these very from a distance, only at your best, only when you're the most romantic and it's fleeting, and
right.
And that she would lose interest in him too if he were to.
That makes more sense.
Actually, here's my feeling, because I feel like, okay, so he needs, you know, like a partner, the female, to see him in his best possible state. He was intoxicated by the relationship with Amy because the best self that she insisted on was kind of, he had to like climb up a few rungs to like to be that guy on a regular basis.
Right.
I feel like, you know, Andy, you know, what just liked him being this journalist guy who had
regular
come from
guy.
The big city.
Not so much a big.
But Andy doesn't see him doing the washing up or nag him for doing something. Well, not doing the washing up.
Yeah,
Either way, it's very much a show up, have a drink,
right?
Tell a story, have sex.
Yeah.
In his world, it's the ideal relationship.
Right. Right.
In my world, that's the ideal relationship. Well, yeah.
Then there's all this other stuff. Well, that's another thing. I think it's kind of beautiful that through the lens of a crime thriller, I mean, I feel like in this sort of Patricia Highsmith tradition, it was looking at the things between men and women in the most dispassionate, you know, like, lens possible. Like, through the eye of a sociopath, this is the things that these monkeys do to each other when they're mating.
Right.
You know? And so, occasionally that was disturbing. Occasionally it was like, something so true was said that all of the clinging and cherishing of, like, Amy's parents, you know, like, I mean, that, you know, in most narratives, the way they were, despite, you know, evidence surfacing of them being more damaged than they would let on, I mean, they would be seen as cute. I mean, the lifelong soulmates. Yeah. They, you know, my parents have been in love with each other.
And yet, repeatedly, that is a problem. Their touching seems inappropriate to both their daughter and their son-in-law.
And, yes, Nick doesn't want to hook a corner at their house and find them cherishing each other.
Right. Oh, they're both so annoyed at that.
Right, their giant character flaw is that they're in a healthy relationship.
Their giant love.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So
And it's great. They are, they seem to be parents who love their daughter, whatever their issues.
Right.
And they love their son-in-law. They back him until it seems impossible to back him.
Right.
You can't really fault them, their demeanor throughout.
You can't. I mean, I think the scene where they approach her.
And yet, they're frequently.
Yeah.
They're not just simpering.
No.
Lovable people. There's something about that.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, and they've
her
got a real
edge. Her mom is suspicious.
Edge. Yes.
Her dad really wants to believe him.
Right.
Well, and there's the guilt factor of them having blown their money and had to take back.
No,
but that is so endearing. I thought that was sweet.
You know, that's one of the things that kept popping up for me as maybe this is a red herring. Uh-huh. Because when we found out they were both totally unreliable, all the things that each of them said became suspect. And so I kept waiting for things. I kept looking, you know, in the second half where it's more like this murder mystery thing. Uh-huh. Oh, they didn't actually take her money. She has all of her money stuffed away in the Cayman Islands.
Right.
You know, what is with the credit card purchases?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Things that were left hanging.
Right.
That I just didn't, that weren't tied up as beautifully as, say, Patricia Highsmith might have done.
It keeps him incriminated, so he doesn't just go to the cops.
Right.
I suppose, but he... Yeah.
Well, I think what... I mean, in Patricia Highsmith, I find that there's generally... There is often a shocking twist.
Near the end.
Yeah, but...
The shocking twist was in the middle.
Well, yeah, and I felt like there was this, like, chain of shocking twists. Like, our appetite for the, like, flipped script has become, like, so compulsive.
My problem with that is it eventually that diminishes. The impact diminishes.
It does, yeah.
If you have shocking twists coming too much...
Right.
You get to feel like you're being tricked a bit too much.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because I think, like, in the Highsmith context, that twist feels like a climax, and what you feel mostly is not constant surprise, but the grinding inevitability of this character's amoral appetite.
You should either see it coming, or you should go, I should have seen that coming.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Well, for me, the big, because I see, like, Amy's sort of journey through the book is, you know, first she's this innocent, and then you find out she's this kind of meticulous criminal mastermind, and has ultimate control over every situation, but then finding out really she doesn't. She has control over Nick. She has control in these very limited circumstances, and she gets into this series. So there's the robbery. There's this series of events where she has completely lost control of the situation. And the twist for me was her going back to Nick because there's the Desi story. So she calls Desi. She ends up, you know, he has built this shrine for her at the fake Swiss chalet on the lakeside.
That is just a man-made lake.
2002.
It is a Swiss-themed McMansion on a man-made lake.
Right?
It is not, you know, but he has, you know, built this beautiful, you know, aviary filled with tulips and painted the room her favorite color circa 1992.
Yeah,
and
can
I just say the irony of Amy being disparaging about a fake opulence is hilarious.
Right. Yeah. And she very quickly, she thinks she can manipulate Desi, but she can't. She very quickly learns that she is not in control of that situation, leading to like the big...
Well, she takes control. Yeah.
Right. She has to take the bull by the horns.
As it were, take the champagne bottle, you know,
by the
lips.
By the lips. The lower lips.
So she fakes this signs of captivity and repeated rape and torture.
Another tangent. Was anyone else bothered by the use of twine?
Everybody
knows
that's a terrible ligature.
She found this ball of twine as a ligature to bind her, and it's like, that's too skinny. Uh-huh. I just didn't. It pulled me out of the story multiple times because twine was brought up about five times.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to throw that out there.
Okay, fair
I'm going to pretend like it I have no input or experience.
Was that more of a problem to you than Nick realizing that he could go on television and wear the favorite tie that she bought for him and appeal to her and say, I love you, knowing that she would then say, now I can come back.
Right.
Did that bother you? Because I found that whole...
The now I could come back part surprised me.
That he knew what she was thinking, having realized that he knows nothing about what she's thinking, to suddenly have such an astute observation, which then actually happens.
Here's my question. It's with the on the subject of emotions, right? So... Where she lost control was with Desi and his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Her own emotions, she didn't know she was going to change her mind about offing herself.
Uh-huh.
And that threw her whole plan.
Right.
He has really buried emotions, but they are there.
Uh-huh.
Or at least I believe that they're there because I'm a man lover, apparently.
Mm.
There's something to their relationship, which is just...
Right, right. Because ultimately... it is a love story.
Yeah.
And this whole thing and everyone involved in this whole thing are just tools that they are using.
For each other.
For each other. And that didn't bother me, Mark, the knowing the script.
No, either.
For to use all of these public appearances and press conferences as a way to woo or trick Amy to come back to him, because in a sense she gave him all of that ammunition. Right. It's as if Amy wrote this gigantic, like if she wrote a list of the 10 things that are wrong with their relationship, except for she did it in a diary that she left for the police.
Right. So she's forced him into this situation.
Right. And he knows what she wants.
But so then by extension, she knows that he knows. So when she's coming back, this is what's interesting at the end to me, is her narration seems to believe that Nick can be changed into the guy that she wants.
Which is what I'm talking about with emotions. But she can't get it.
But what she's managed to do is put him in a position where he can perform that role.
Right.
But it's not actually...
She doesn't care.
She doesn't care.
She wants him to behave like the man that she married.
Yes.
Knowing... She wants him to know that he has to behave that way or she will be his undoing.
Well, she wants to believe what he's doing. That's what's interesting is he can say,
and
I love you.
Willing
and
she's willing to believe it.
The other thing is that, sorry,
yes,
Jason.
Yes, go ahead. No, please.
This idea that it is about their relationship from beginning to end. If you spend enough time with someone, you want to believe that there is something significant about this.
Yeah.
These things have happened.
Uh-huh.
This must mean something.
Right.
And at the end of it, I don't think either of them really know what they mean to each other, but they want it to mean something, don't they? I mean, maybe
really
he does.
This beautiful moment that I think summed it all up for me, where Amy has come home. She has forced Nick has to know. He has to know how she pulled this off. So she makes him strip down naked and get in the shower,
right.
where she checks him for wires and whispers in his ear the whole story in the shower. And then it's time for bed, and she wants him to come to bed, and he says, "No, I'm gonna sleep on the couch. I'm not coming to bed with you." And she says, "You know, I can still hurt you."
Yeah.
And to me, that's like she's saying, "Play the role. Yeah. Pick up the script. Come to bed."
I have been in that almost exact position.
I want to hear more about this. Maybe when the microphone's
off. That's a whole other. That's not for Book Circle. That's for a whole other kind of circle. But yes, there's something in this fractured, gone girl way that is romantic about that. I think they're not just her feelings for him, but their actual relationship is romantic in the sense that, I think they understand each other's emptiness and how much of their identity is performance, and that they have that in common. So she's saying, I have performed all these roles to get us to this place where, you know, it's like these characters can't exist in a no bullshit zone, but let's choose our bullshit. And let's make our bullshit complimentary, because I know I've seen you perform the kind of man I want you to be. So you know,
so the only difference is she understands their bullshit before he does.
I think you know, like you said, there's probably more a less damaged person inside.
I want
ultimately
to believe that. That's my thing. I hear what you're saying about the romance and the core of the story being that they end up in this place where they understand they're both empty. For me, the ending, it just felt icky.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. It's super icky because they're not resolved they understand each other's strategies.
People.
No, and the paranoia is never going to go away.
I can still hurt you.
But I'm imagining a lifelong relationship that's almost the antimatter opposite of her parents' relationship, where rather than this constant, there's this constant performance of understanding, like explosions of like erotic hunger and then apathy, and with their two competing memoirs about the event, like trying to consume each other constantly.
Which is what I mean,
you know,
that's relationships could get to that point where this is how we are,
right? Yeah. And I'm collecting evidence so that the police can confirm that this is how we are. No, I have this evidence, and
so
I will
that
bring
the police can so that the media can confirm that this is how we are.
And this is what the book is essentially two competing narratives.
Right, the vomit in the back of the freezer that she has saved for like 2 years, and when he
the
finds
poisoning.
It, right?
Yeah.
when he finds it, he's mad because he finally realized, he knew that it was hidden somewhere, but he realized what a dig it was that she put it in the back of the freezer. Oh, Nick never cleans out the freezer.
Yep. And so he cleans it out and leaves the jar.
And, right. And, those,
and she doesn't care. She's like, yep, he got me there.
Those tiny observations of, excuse me, of the ways in which tiny gestures domestically can be seen like that.
Yeah.
You could leave something out. Like, well, were you trying to tell me something by leaving that out?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Oh, no, dear. I just cleaned it up. I just happened to leave it there after I cleaned it.
Right.
But you could have put it away, but you were leaving me a message.
Uh-huh. That cleaned it.
I had a million things on my mind that day. That was just one of them.
Right.
The way in which they spiraling back down into this tiny...
You don't understand the consequences of your actions. Mm-hmm. And, so it's like this... This domestic situation, it's a relationship
as
book
it
that
starts
explodes.
Out and then ends. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of want to read it again with that perspective.
Right. It like explodes into like pulp frenzy and then contracts again into
domestic
into that dread.
Yeah.
Snip and snap and pick.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I feel like once the twists settle down, I mean, what we're left with is just a really ugly relationship.
Yeah. And to me,
it'd never end.
A forgiving reading of that middle to the second half of the book is that a lot of the characters, the lawyer, the cops, become kind of stereotypes.
Uh-huh.
But it's through the, it's through the eyes of the two characters.
Uh-huh.
So they're seeing them. They're kind of casting them as, oh, you're the sympathetic cop. You're the cop who doesn't care.
Uh-huh. Right.
Oh, and the lawyer. I love that the lawyer is like...
You're the shark.
That the shark lawyer who represents men who obviously killed their wives.
Yeah.
And he starts out as this douchebag archetype. But it turns out he's really in love with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
He really likes Clamato.
Yeah, he's the most human character.
But how even the Clamato is seen as an affectation by Nick at one point. Maybe this is what he does to suggest some kind of character.
Right. And he's
there's his quirk. His name's Clamato.
Almost by the end, you see the disdain that the lawyer has for Nick. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah, you're the two most fucked up people I've ever met in my entire life.
And
I specialize.
A lot of fucked up people. I loved that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I did.
It,
there was a lot to love about this book in that way. The fact that the relationship issues were so relatable to anyone who's been in a long-term relationship. It's so many of the things.
Well, and the portrait that it paints, like it's presenting, it's ordinary suburban world.
Ordinary, yes.
Well, but there is not a single character that felt like an extra to me. It felt like every character was some kind of refraction of their dysfunction. It felt like,
That's interesting. Noelle and... Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that fell flat for me, where it lost me, was I did not believe that the FBI would not be on to her. Because the interview, she's giving this interview and it's so...
Yeah. Oh, she's terrible in the interview.
She's terrible in the interview and there's so many holes in her
story. Because she's explaining the story with such detail.
Right.
It just suggests that there's more to come.
She's congratulating herself through the entire police interrogation.
Uh-huh.
You probably missed this detail, but here's what I think probably happened.
As
I was beaten up and bleeding and on the floor, this is what happened.
I
you
kept
missed
waiting
this, but,
for them to stumble on her Ozark Mountain cabin and find those people as witnesses. I really, why didn't they find? She said, oh, they'll never find me here. I'm like, yes, they will.
Right.
Draw a line of how far you can go. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I watched too many. Police procedures.
Well, no, but so many of the characters in this book watch too many police procedurals, and to that.
It's
mentioned
it's the great
constantly.
Defense of the book, and it might be one of the flaws of the book that it relies on that idea so much that every time something seems a bit hokey, someone says this might be
like
a bit
TV.
Hokey.
Yeah,
it's one of the lovable defenses. It's also one of the damning criticisms for me.
Yeah,
both at the same time.
Indeed,
because right up to a point, it's like there's until she there is a dead man here. There's a man who is dead.
Oh, that was so awesome! I loved that part of the book. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
so
a little
Jesse,
too hysterical.
Okay, no.
Dead man.
Okay,
this
so
man
here's
dead.
The thing. Amy constructed the myth. Partly about Desi. Uh-huh. I mean, he was enamored, besotted, stalking her, but he didn't try to kill himself with pills. She constructed that part.
Right.
But then he did, it was intriguing when then he did prove himself to be somewhat of a monster.
Uh-huh.
Now, did she create that?
But I don't even think he was that much of a monster.
Was he? I mean, the other thing
really? Is keeping her.
Well, you got to remember, Pat. We're being told this by her,
right?
So if we believe everything she's telling us
in the second half of the book, when she's describing the paint, the paint was not fresh.
Right.
He said the tulips would bloom all year. I believed that.
Sure.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
But I think by that point, we've come to understand her as a bit of a monster herself.
Yeah.
So, it changed their relationship in that, like, Desi is like a vampire who, like, what is it? He's not necessarily attracted to this golden girl that he knew. It's like...
He needs something.
Well, yeah. I mean, he needs her. He seems almost, despite this wanting to keep this kind of, like, virginal... ambiance or of who they were way back when is perhaps, see someone as twisted and
as he is.
Yeah. Maybe he built the chateau when he thought they were going to get married. They were in a relationship for quite some time. But,
think about
it from Desi's perspective.
I'm trying.
She is effectively dead. She cannot leave. Because she'll be found out. He's got her, but he never...
But she also gets what she wants. A safe place to be.
Yeah.
Protected, where she can watch. Where does she want to go? What does she need at that point?
She did want to get out, though. Because he annoys her.
Well, right. She wanted to get out.
So she kills him.
Uh-huh. I know. Isn't it awesome?
Poor pathetic Desi.
Nick was in the same position as she was, in a way.
But Desi never forced himself on her until she decided that it was useful for her to have sex with him.
Right. I don't think he's heterosexual. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I think Desi is a vampire. I think
Desi's in love with his mother.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you know who's going to play him in the movie?
Who?
Oh,
Steven Seagal.
No,
at last,
shut up.
He's back.
Is he alive?
Who's going to play him in the movie?
Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh,
say that again.
Okay, all right.
Well, Neil Patrick Harris.
First, just so you know, Book Circle listeners, there is a film in development. It's all shot. It's coming out, right?
David Fincher is directing.
Shot Seven.
Seven mm-hmm. and Fight Club and Zodiac and so many lovely.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Is Brad Pitt in this movie? Because isn't every movie?
Ben Affleck is playing Nick.
Which I think is perfect because sleaze factor.
Well, yes, I generally
he's
handsome and vacuous in so many films where I've like the camera lingers on him, especially films that he's directing where the camera lingers on him and there's silence and we're supposed to be watching an actor emote. I see just the sheen of narcissism, and he's like contemplating the geometry of his own perfect jaw.
He moves his jaw.
Yes.
He kind of...
Right, he does. It's a jaw thing.
This is what a man would do with his jaw when having a feeling.
Yes, yes. And I think that's perfect for Nick, who is constantly interrogating his own behaviors, trying to sell himself as
human. Let's go back for a second.
Yes.
Okay, so Nick... is also a sociopath or a deeply flawed, empty, vacuous human who deserves to be in a relationship with Amy.
Deserves implies a moral order to the universe that I don't think the book mm-hmm. supports. But
I agree, okay. And I don't think there's a moral order.
They
to
bring
the
out the best in each other.
Okay, so they bring out the best in each other. What of then?
Yes,
my favorite character in the book.
Yes.
His sister, Go.
Oh, yeah. Go's great.
She's the stalwart. She's the lantern in the wilderness.
Right.
She is the one whose word you can totally believe.
Right.
All throughout. She's no bullshit. She loves him.
Yeah.
She's his twin. Is she like his soul or something? Did she come out of the inside of him and left him an empty shell and she's like the real one? Or what's going on here? Because she really cares about him and he really appears to care about her.
Well, yeah, and that's his first moment. I love that his first moment of real rage and his internal dialogue is when for a brief second,
believes he might have done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she is brought in for questioning.
Yeah.
He gets angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's...
Well, there's a suggestion that their relationship as twins is special in a way that no other relationship can be.
Right. Which twin relationships? Well,
which he addresses very early on when he says people used to think we had a
Right, I thought that was something that was really off for me that he had to, first he had to state that, and then he had to say unequivocally in his own internal dialogue,
"We did not.
I never
ever
fucked
have
my
sex.
Sister.
I thought that was him telling us he's attracted to her, because I don't think that you would necessarily bring it up unless.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's, and I think that argument that she is, in a sense, his soul, that has some weight, because, like, his... You know, if our partner is, you know, at least theoretically the soulmate, I mean, Amy just augments the worst parts of his character, whereas Go is sort of is a consolidation of all the pieces that he's missing. She's very authentic, and you know,
which is a problem for Amy,
and
their relationship,
right? Yes,
which I liked.
What are all these real people doing around here?
Right?
Yeah,
because Go never quite buys Amy.
Right.
She never buys into the Amy myth.
And you, who's playing Go in the movie? Somebody we don't know.
Oh. Well, who's playing Amy?
An English actress?
Amy, Rosamund Pike.
Oh, I don't know her.
Rosamund Pike. I know the name.
Wait, so who's playing Desi?
Neil Patrick
Harris. Oh, Neil Patrick Harris. Of Doogie Howser fame.
Are you being funny?
No.
You're just being forgetful.
What?
What?
Where am I?
Tyler Perry is the lawyer.
No. Really? Yeah.
As Medea?
That is the wife as well.
Yeah, nice. Let's just act through that fourth wall.
That's odd to me because I think part of the thing was that they were an interracial couple. And
Desi?
That was part of the... No, the lawyer and his wife.
Oh, right.
That was so unexpected for Nick that it throws him...
Well, maybe his wife
a complete
is
loop.
White.
Maybe.
Maybe it's not.
Inversions all the way down. Mm-hmm. All the way down. I remembered, it just popped into my head. This is a point we were making hours ago. But in terms of everyone putting on airs, everyone assuming fictitious identities, there's also that woman who wanted to be Amy's best friend.
Oh, Noelle.
Noelle, yeah.
But the woman earlier that she was
college.
Menaced. Yes.
The one who...
Susie.
Who
wants to be Susie.
Yeah. She wanted to be not like her best, the best, Amy's best friend in the book.
That's what we thought.
We thought she was pretending to be her best friend and then pretending to be Amy, but she was actually, Amy was actually making a pretend to pretend to want that.
Right. It was all this elaborate ploy to get back at Amy's parents. So Amy said
she
made her act batshit crazy.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
To annoy her parents. Yeah.
Because
this is where it was all kind of Perry Mason.
Uh-huh. Right.
It was, you could see her
part
on the stand.
I loved when the boyfriend, the ex that she had accused of rape, said, "Oh, I was expecting you to call," kind of thing. You know,
right.
It's like,
right.
Oh my God.
I should have warned.
She's got you, man.
I feel bad for you.
Yeah.
I first heard it on the news and I thought, oh man, he's in for it now.
She's been accused, Gillian Flynn, of misogyny. Because
Jason brought this up earlier.
Right. Yes.
No, he didn't.
Okay. What do we think about that?
Women.
Like, right.
Here. Yes. Ladies, what do you think of that?
Don't call me a lady.
Is writing a book, or maybe several books, where a woman might be behaving far more terribly than any man present, is that misogyny?
Bullshit.
Well, I think it's very telling that the entire first half of the book, Amy is a very wonderful girl who's incapable of doing anything to harm anyone. She takes care of her dying mother-in-law, and she drives the women to the blood bank to donate blood, even though she's terribly afraid of blood. And the whole time we're thinking, this is bullshit.
Uh-huh.
This is not a real person.
Right.
So even when Amy is posing herself as this perfect woman, there is an overarching sense of dread in there because it can't be true.
So is that a criticism of is the author almost telling us that there's an expectation of the way women are to be, which is just ridiculous
in fiction?
And that Amy is aware of this,
but we don't read fiction to hear about the way people are all the time, the
no.
things they do. We want to hear people at their most extreme, and we want to see them do things
agreed.
That...
Agreed.
Right.
I agree
agreed.
With that completely. And it makes the stakes higher. It makes us want to continue reading.
Well,
Margaret Atwood wrote a great evil female protagonist. Shoot, what was the name of the book? X, Y, there's an X or a Y in it. I'm going to look it up. Where the women in the book are imagining Xenia or something, that this woman is preying on all their husbands and she's writing them these notes and all the husbands are oblivious and they're falling for her. And it turns out in the end, all the guys are like, her?
Yeah.
What? And all the women are... And nobody says to Margaret Atwood, you're a misogynist. You know, it's human behavior all around. Men write about evil men characters constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, to me, that's a non-issue.
Yeah. Well, I think fellas,
good.
Are women capable of evil?
I hope so. I really do. I really hope so.
There's no doubt in my mind. I could show you the bruises.
You hope so, but you don't know.
I could show you the bruises.
I think I, yeah, I mean, I'm a lover of women.
As am I. Yeah.
Which sounds horrible the way we just said
indeed,
doesn't it?
But hey.
Just like Joe Easterhaas. I love women.
I love women.
I love them every which way.
Backwards,
forwards.
Well, that's what's interesting is, like, when I was saying earlier, the parallels between this and something like Basic Instinct at certain points.
Right.
And those kind of films are frequently seen as being kind of portraying these shrieking sexist versions of womankind that could never exist in the real world.
Well, and when that narrative has been concocted by, you know, by Joe Easterhaas and Paul Verhoeven, you know, I can almost understand those criticisms being leveled because of these swaggering demon dogs of cinema or whatever. But Gillian Flynn doing it, I think it's interesting because the Amy that's presented to us in the diaries is almost like the Eat, Pray, Love lady.
Yeah,
right. You know?
It betrays an awareness and then it undercuts
nobody
that.
Nobody likes her. Right. Nobody believes that bullshit is all.
Which
real.
Is why the whole time I read.
Want to.
I agree. They want to.
The whole time I read Eat, Pray, Love, I just was filled with this sense of dread. Like,
when's she going to rip her mask off?
When she's going to rip her mask off and kill everything.
Dread and self-loathing. It's like it's written to make you.
So what page does she do that on? Just so I can. Jump to it.
I don't know. I never actually read that book.
Me neither.
I know.
I'm You're just performing exposed. Like Amy is.
I know. Oh, all of it. See, women.
Well, yes.
Well, the ladies are taking their masks off, folks.
I just don't think it's fair to say that anyone, especially that women, are only allowed to tell one kind of story about one kind of woman.
I agree. I think one of the laziest criticisms you can ever offer anything is to say, oh, this is this Marxist... It's clearly portraying his Marxist ideals in this character or this, you know.
If
this
Billie
sexist,
Jean
this
King
feminist.
Was a feminist for saying that she could play tennis as good as any man, then Gillian Flynn is a feminist for saying that Amy can be just as evil and conniving as any
couple.
You're not a tennis fan then, are you?
Right.
No, I'm not.
You know, and we read to emotionally interface with extreme characters and to go beyond our boundaries. But I think also... to fish out survival strategies. At least I do in the books I'm reading. And
there are relatable, very, very real-world things about this book. And we've touched on this many times during this discussion. The stuff about relationships at the beginning is just really true to life. Now, weren't you saying earlier, Mark, that she said in an interview she wrote this book, she was inspired to write this book by her marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That seemed like a funny thing to say in an interview, but also there are details in there that are very much drawn from.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's in some ways like again,
and so it's the extremes, but we need to relate to them as well.
Yeah, no.
So one of the fun things is that she can draw this carefully nuanced world of two people, and then she can halfway through the book rip it apart and say, "This is bullshit."
indeed. So in the end, do you feel like that's what has happened here? And when the book winds down and we're stuck with these...
They're stuck. They're stuck with each other.
I'm so glad to leave them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, me too.
It was a fun ride. But
I really liked reading it. I really enjoyed reading it.
I wasn't wishing any of them to get their comeuppance, which is a difference between this and some of those... films we talked about where the woman always dies at the end or loses or there is some definite moral judgment attached.
But I think the best in those femme fatales, because that always feels like a moralistic, you know, and almost misogynistic reflex, mm-hmm. to kill that character, but like in things, in femme fatale things like The Last Seduction or, mm-hmm. you know, narratives
she
like
wins.
That. Yes, what you just want to see the bones of all the men who had all these ideals and projections and her just rolling off in a limousine.
And in Basic Instinct, she's yeah. very much still there at the end.
Yeah, except she's still with Michael Douglas, which...
She
which,
loses, which, you're right.
Yeah.
I was horrified at the ending.
Uh-huh.
I very much wanted her to get caught.
Me too.
I wanted the police to see immediately through. But I think she says somewhere around the middle of the book, like the bigger the lie,
uh-huh.
the easier it is to believe. And she had strung this amazing trail of bullshit. I don't think there was any way for anyone to pin any one thing down. But that it was the pregnancy.
Right.
That's what did it for me. The thought, like, you can do whatever you want for the rest of your lives, but the moment that we discover uh-huh. that she has saved this sperm for, like, 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, 4 years she has saved the sperm just in case. In case she needs to become
and
pregnant.
And, of course, he
in
doesn't
a time
know
because
he
where...
never cleans out the freezer.
Right.
Uh-huh. Even though that was the vomit. But, yes, same.
But, you know, the forethought that she in case I make my husband so angry that he will no longer put his sperm in me, I better have some on reserve.
Right.
It's
mother and child.
Horrifying. Yeah. And once that happened, I really wanted her to die. I wanted her to die.
I wanted her.
A little
her...
too close to home? Pregnant no, Christy?
You're going to delete that. Yeah. No, because I'm a mother and because I don't want any child in the world to be subjected to these two people.
Uh-huh.
I know.
It's horrible. But and that the ending, there's no, like, it does imply that it goes on forever. Mm. The ending
oh,
is...
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
His idea that he needs to be there to save this child...
From what he suffered.
Is hilarious and pathetic and uh-huh. confused. And that's when the various people around him who have... tried to stick by him, his sister, and the cop.
Right, and he's typing his story in the middle of the night. He's going to tell his side of the story.
To what end?
I mean, right. But until the pregnancy, and then it's, you know.
You'll be
then to me, it just becomes, I mean, how many decent guys, not that Nick is a decent guy, but how many decent guys do you know that were roped in by a woman?
At least three.
Right, either by a real or fake pregnancy, that they have been completely disarmed.
Right.
But yeah, the end, I mean, the ending is amazing
and
frustrating.
And she has the last word.
Yeah.
Well, and I think in his particular strain of evil will also get practiced over the course of their relationship. I mean, she is the wire mother. But
he'll have his moments, his small victories.
Yeah, and it'll be this constant.
Because they're playing the same game, ultimately.
Right, yeah.
She might have gone a lot further with it.
Yeah,
they.
Yeah. Well, in his, like, lifetime of evasions of authenticity, will find their perfect cradle in this relationship, and her lifetime of manipulation and fantasy will find the perfect canvas in him. Oh, I know.
Can I just say, the copy of the book that I have had a previous owner that I assume was a prisoner, because there's a prison number
personal
in the
property.
Front. There's a stamp on the top. And there's a couple of moments during the book, two or three moments where the owner has written things in the book.
Uh-huh. In pen.
Like in pen.
Exclamation
point. There's a long passage which is quite a nice passage where who is talking? Nick is talking about we're living in a time where you can't see anything for the first time. Everything is experienced secondhand.
Yes.
People have done everything. This kind of... lost rant almost, after which in blue pen we have the line, holy fucking amen.
You know, this is a very astute prisoner. I want to know who this
the person. Only other comment in the whole book is during Amy talking about Nick being taught a lesson. He glides through life with that charming Nicky grin, his beloved child entitlement, and it goes on. And then the one comment after this is ex-wife.
Ouch.
From a man in prison. What happened?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Something grisly,
so
no doubt.
True.
I kind of pictured him as the Nick character having been suckered.
Yeah.
Well, it is refreshing that to see this woman who's initially painted as the victim. She's his Moriarty.
His Moriarty. Right. Yeah. She's taking control. She's pulling all the strings. She has laid out this whole plan for years.
You need me to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need me to do this so that you can become the man that you are
meant
to be.
This shows I care about you.
Right. Yeah. Well, in that passage, which I also, when I read it, that he said, holy fucking amen to, about just the creeping absolute, you know, like lack of authenticity, and that we're copies of performances of impressions. That his fascination with that quality in culture is, she's the goddess of that stuff. I mean, I think he's really, he
in so many ways, he represents what we all are, which in so, he can be completely aware of bullshit and completely unaware of it.
And completely addicted to it.
Yeah. And the bullshit has consequences. I mean, the big consequences of the case, you know, come out only when the talk show host, you know, vilifies him. Right. And then the other, you know, legitimate news anchor interviews him. Those are like the two big moments.
Right.
And it's all played out as if on reality TV, you know, in the media.
Right,
because in a way, I mean, there's this, the huge sort of driving force of the first part of the book is this idea that it's always the husband. Mm-hmm. And
what can he say once you've said that?
Right. And that he's fighting against these perceptions of men that he can't, like, and he may be almost all the things they say men are, except for he didn't do it.
Uh-huh.
And how do you fight against that?
But we make our minds up. We see these cases on TV. We make our minds up, and we pick our villain, don't we? And as so many people point out to him, it's almost irrelevant, the real evidence in the case. What's really really telling, without the body, is that people think he did it. Right. A jury will think he did it. A jury will look at his face and think he did it, and that's the most damning thing against him.
Right.
That we, the readers of the book, will judge him. Mm-hmm. You know, this is his fate. It's in our hands.
Right.
Beyond any crime he's ever done. And justice is delivered by viewers of television.
Showbiz.
Yep.
Right.
Showbiz all the way down.
So this movie comes out in the fall.
Speaking of showbiz. So, yeah, that should be wonderful. Fincher's great with this sort of thing, but I love Gillian Flynn's work.
Me too. I just want to read more now.
Yeah, indeed.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Not me.
I mean, despite this, all the stuff we're talking about that may be bugged or whatever, I really, really, really liked reading this one.
Yeah, yeah. And, I wonder, I mean, I haven't read her previous book, so I'm not sure, you know, like where this is on her evolutionary arc as an artiste. But I'd like to see, you know, more of the nuanced literary domesticity, you know, like the courage to kind of see that through to its conclusion without necessarily exploding into the pulp, twisty-turny, you know, hyperbolic roller coaster ride.
Yeah, the nuanced literary domesticity was the part,
gut-wrenching and harrowing. Yeah.
Right?
And it was, yes, and then it kicked into this gear of fun that I wasn't expecting.
But that I appreciated.
Yeah, so. Engaging till the end. But let's stay in that clammy bedroom and shtup those sociopaths in the shadows of our broken human souls.
We have to shtup them?
We have to bear witness to the shtupping between them.
Okay.
I don't want to read any more Gillian Flynn. I'm reading a very nice young adult paranormal romance right now.
I'm calming you.
I like my domesticity unliterary, and I like my villains thoroughly punished by the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
This made me uncomfortable.
Oh, sweetie.
I'm sorry. Well, I like the heroes and villains.
I loved
it. Punished from start to finish.
I loved it, but...
right, yeah.
I'm glad that I'm out of it.
Yeah, nice. Well, we did our time inside Gone Girl, and...
By the way, the title, Gone Girl?
Yeah.
No, I think that called back to Amy. There's Amy is going through a series of parts, which she says explicitly, I'm playing cool girl. I'm playing comedy girl, and then she's saying, now I'm playing Gone Girl. Yeah, and everybody loves Gone Girl, yeah.
Never mind, I'm over it.
Yes. All right. We're all over it now, and we're moving on. And I think next on the dance card will be Authority. Yeah, by Jeff Vandermeer. And so we're gonna keep rolling, exploring the world of books and keeping reading alive like we do on Book Circle Online. And we're glad that you're tuning in and bearing witness to our angelic autopsies of these beautiful works of art. And if you, however you are receiving these transfusions from the Book Circle dimension, try us out on iTunes. And
I love iTunes.
iTunes is fantastic as a service, as a corporation, as a concept. There's just something beautiful about the iTunes idea. And that's another beautiful idea. But if you go on iTunes, then, you know, and leave some comments, rate us, tell us what you think, and we'll get together en masse. We'll have little group, almost like Reddit, you know, press conferences, except a little more, you know, low tech and, you know,
literary.
Smear. Yeah, if you will. And we'll answer your comments and, you know, tell us how we can improve, you know, these podcasts. Tell us, throw some book ideas at us that you'd like us to explore. I am Jason Squamata, and it is my delight to have been here with you in the libraries of Maria Menounos, in the bowels of the AfterBuzz TV satellite headquarters, here in the glory that is Book Circle Online, with my co-hosts
Pat Janowski,
Mark Savage,
Christy Lovato,
and once again Jason Squamata. Thank you so much for tuning in. Keep it bookish, keep it circular, keep reading alive, and everything you need resides in the ink, and it's waiting.
And for God's sake, be nice to your wives.
Okay, and your husbands.
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO. Join the circle.